Thank you, Alicia. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for being here. This afternoon, I'm going to report to you just a brief summary of the findings from the Healthy Weight Demonstration Projects. This project, it's a HRSA-funded project that APT Associates have had the privilege of conducting an evaluation of. And my project team, of course, includes myself as a project director, Debbie Klein-Walker, Cheryl Austin, Leah Staub-DeLong, Sabre Wilson. And our project officer is Lisa King, who is hoping to join us this afternoon. Before I go further, though, I want to acknowledge the HRSA grantees that were funded to implement these projects, and especially the program participants. Hopefully, at the end of this presentation, you will see what one project has done. The funding source, as I mentioned earlier, is the Health Services and Research and Health Resources and Services Administration, that's commonly known as HRSA. And I have no relationships other than that one to disclose. And here is Lisa. Lisa is the project officer for this project, and I'm glad that she's here on time. As you, we are all well aware, obesity has become an increasing problem in not only in the U.S. but in internationally, and we are well aware also that the correlates of obesity, especially among women, who were the focus of these demonstration grants, specifically women of reproductive age. Increasing age is one of them. Lower education and socioeconomic status are also two other risk factors. And the data has shown that one in five women are obese at the beginning of their pregnancy. And there are a number of adverse outcomes associated with high maternal BMI and obesity during pregnancy. These would not be new to you because these are CDC maps, and they illustrate the increase in obesity rates among U.S. adults over the past three decades. As we have seen, those rates have increased from less than 15% in the 1990s to over 30% in 2010 in some states. And you, as you notice, the highest rates are in the South and in the East. Now, this table, it's not showing a direct relationship between the demonstration grants and the rates or the rank. I just used it just to illustrate what's going on in the states for which grantees received funding. Awards were made to 14 grantees in 12 states, and those 14 grantees implemented 15 programs. One grantee implemented two programs, one in an urban and another in a rural area, which is why you will see sometimes N is equal to 14 when we are talking about grantees, and N is equal to 15 when we are talking about programs. These demonstration grants were awarded for three-year periods, beginning in 2004, with the last one being awarded in 2007. So in 2004, Massachusetts, Ohio, and Texas, grantees in Massachusetts, Ohio, and Texas received grants. 2005 in Arizona, Delaware, Florida, and Wisconsin. In 2006, another in Alaska, another program in another grantee in Arizona, one in Illinois, and two in Michigan, and in 2007 in California and in Nebraska. And in 2010, we were fortunate to obtain the contract to conduct the evaluation of these programs. And we are now at the finding stage, and we are going to be wrapping this up at the beginning of 2012. Thank you. The goal of these programs specifically, and I'll just read for you what's on the slide because I want to not misrepresent HRSA's goal in this case, and it was to address and mitigate the detrimental effects and risk for both the woman and infant should a woman enter pregnancy either overweight or obese. And as I mentioned earlier, these awards were focused on interventions for women, specifically women of reproductive age. This slide shows the percent of HRSA grantee organizations with healthy weight programs. As you can see, the majority were community health centers and clinics, and then we had a few public health departments, universities, and community organizations. As we mentioned, there were 14 grantees across 12 states. 60% of these programs were implemented in urban areas or central cities, 27% in rural area, and basically there was one in what would be considered frontier area and another one on the U.S.-Mexico border. As a requirement for being funded, all of the grantee programs were required to include a component on nutrition, counseling and education, on physical activity, and on health and wellness. And the majority of the programs provided social support and services to participants. And many of these programs, or the majority of these programs, actually almost all of them, were developed based on needs assessments. Many of the grantees formed partnerships with community-based organizations and schools, I mean faith-based organizations, YMCA. And many of them used or modified existing evidence-based programs or promising practices. And these they also made modifications based on participant feedback, not necessarily to the curriculum, but in terms of the flexibility of administering the curriculum in terms of the length of time and so on. Now, I have two slides that identify the programs implemented by grantees and the evidence-based or promising practices on which it's based, so that at least you can get an idea as to the origin of the interventions that they implemented. So these are the ones for the other rooms. Programs in the different states. Now, where it says not applicable, it meant that it was not clear from the documents we have reviewed, and in some cases what they have done is put pieces together of various evidence-based and promising practice and participant feedback to develop what they consider a new and innovative program. Or they went back into their tradition. For instance, in Wisconsin, Honor of Women developed a program based on the traditions of the tribe. Sorry, I should go back one. Now, all of these programs focused on specific goals, and those goals together fell into these categories where they wanted to increase fruit and vegetable consumption, to reduce the intake of unhealthy foods, to help participants with menu planning and portion size, to increase exercise and physical activity, and just behaviors that will improve overall health status, such as monitoring your glucose or high blood pressure and those kinds of things. The topics covered by the programs, as I shown earlier, because they were required to have some specific components. These are where the topics covered in those areas. So all of the programs implemented covered nutrition. All except one covered actual exercise and physical activity in addition to exercise class, the one program that didn't actually have exercise, and, you know, for specific reason, as in not finding an appropriate location that was convenient and safe and all of the qualities that they expected it to be, and to reduce barriers. They did have exercise classes. I mean, they did have physical education classes, but they were not able to engage in actual exercise. And some programs covered mental health screening and other mental health counseling in collaboration with their community based or through their parent organization, because it may have been a hospital system or a big clinic and they were able to link and provide that service. Health and wellness. In general, health and wellness would include screening for diabetes and lipid panels and other kinds of biological anthropometric measurements. And healthy lifestyle would be about behaviors to maintain health for the family in general, and one covered leadership in terms of helping women to manage and the kinds of things that they should do to keep healthy, to develop skills of finding a job, things like that. So some of these programs, as I mentioned earlier, and all of them try to provide some kind of social support and social service for the women, even after the program ended. Now, many of these programs were conducted in sort of a two-hour session over 8 or 10 weeks or so, and they were group education sessions in the classroom. They did a lot of cooking demonstrations. They had supermarket tours for reading the menu, a lot of group exercises, but there were also one-on-one counseling, and there were some group counseling and community events. What the grantees and the participants themselves identified as the innovative components of the programs they implemented included stuff like the video conferencing network that linked isolated communities. So, for instance, in Alaska, where the programs was developed with a number of different for a number of different tribes, and they couldn't all get together on a regular basis at a central location, they were able to do that. They kept personalized fitness and nutrition journals. They also set up learning centers where they had kiosks for the women to look to find information, not only about health, but during one site visit, I've actually observed them looking for opportunities for jobs and using it to obtain other resources. And, of course, they had a variety of classes and a lot of new dances and so on, some of which you'll see in the video. I don't want to give too much away, but you'll see some of this. Now, many of the programs, because, as you know, one of the real setbacks to implementing these programs are the barriers that a lot of women experience, so that they are unable to fully participate in these programs. And what the grantees did was provide additional services such as child care. They were very flexible. I think flexibility was one thing that came out really strong across all of the programs, because participants were able to schedule alternate sessions so that if they miss a regular class, in some area, they can use the curriculum or the workbook or whatever the other the logs or materials that were provided. They can use that to complete that session. And in cases where they were promotoras working with them, they were able to follow up and do that. I know I have only 3 minutes left, so I'm just going to go through and not read the quotes. You can actually take a look at that because I wanted to give you a chance to take a look at the video. But one thing I really want you to show you is our review process. And also our results based on that review process. So when we went through our review process and looked at both the qualitative data, because a lot of the analysis had to be qualitative because of the variation in the different types of programs implemented, we were able to look at their goals and their accomplishments to determine what was successful. And the successful programs either partially or fully achieved all of their major outcome goals, or the majority of them. They had high retention rates of over 75%, and they were able to sustain the programs after HRSA funding, either through participant initiative or they were able to obtain additional funding. The good programs also were able to do that, but not as much as the what we consider excellent programs. And so those two categories are the ones we consider successful. And the characteristics of the successful programs had strong organizational community support and resources. They addressed the needs of the target population and their preferences. And they also had formal and informal follow-up even after the program ended. And there were some organizational and contextual barriers that were outside of the control of the grantees. And I will just end, since I'm done at 1 minute, and we'll just show you just a little bit of the video. Just end with these quotes from the participants and the grantees. And in summary, they were successful in increasing awareness about the program's obesity and its related consequences. So now we can go to the...
Ha 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 ha!